16. Borlaos. Luke's expedition returned to a Borlaos that was changed, at least in the vicinity of the Bionics building and the other areas held by New Republic forces. On the surface, everything looked worse. Luke and Kel had to pilot the ugly truth through layered defenses, Dovin Basal minefields and coral skipper patrols. That surely would have led to the destruction of a vehicle controlled by lesser pilots. Outlying buildings around the Bionics building had been smashed by frequent capital ship bombardments. Round the Chrono Coral Skipper Squadron's sorties against the ships in orbit had reduced the Luzonkia to a flying wreck, had battered the other cruisers and star destroyers. Black Moon Squadron, one of the elite units quartered out of the Bionics building complex, had lost 3 pilots only today, including its commander and second-in-command. The pilots, soldiers, and crews ran on calf and stubbornness, some barely able to stay on their feet as they came on duty. But in his first hours home, Luke was able to peer beneath the surface. Kip Duran welcomed Luke back with an unambiguous smile and handshake. When he'd heard the tale of Lord Nyax, he offered no criticism of Luke's handling of the matter. Han and Leia seemed at ease with one another, no lingering tension flavoring words they exchanged. They told Luke that, with the likelihood very high of an all-out push by the Yuuzhan Vong in the Puria system, they were postponing their next resistance run in order to give Jaina whatever support they could. Jaina was different, too, somehow at ease. She did not burn any less brightly for the loss of her brothers. She did not fight any less fiercely against the Yuuzhan Vong, but she was in balance, no longer leaning toward the dark side. She smiled easily and often. His family, recently torn apart and flung in all directions, not yet reassembled, was healing. It was the Bionics building's mess hall, but was not being used for that purpose now, and would never be used for that purpose again. Its tables were all arrayed with chairs only on one side, so they could face the head of the room, the seats occupied by General Wedge Antilles, Colonel Tycho Selchu, and Luke Skywalker. Now those tables were filled with divisional heads, squadron commanders, ship captains, spies, Jedi. "The Star Lancer Project," Wedge said, "is a laser-based superweapon roughly analogous to a Death Star main gun, with 2 important differences. The first difference is that it distorts space and time to accelerate its destructive force through hyperspace, allowing it to be used as a first-strike weapon against enemy star systems light-years away." Muttering from those who were not in on the Star Lancer secret filled the air, but could not compete with distant detonations. The Yuuzhan Vong bombardment was now nearly continuous, the New Republic forces not numerous or rested enough to beat it back as in weeks past. Even now, squadrons of tired pilots were defending the Bionics facility from that pounding, but could not defend it completely. Wedge pointed to an area of empty air, and the hologram image filled it. It was a trifling bit of sleight of hand, Tycho standing by to activate the holoprojector at the right moment. But there was, Wedge thought, a certain amount of dash to it, and he could see Iella at the back of the room, smiling at his display. The hologram showed star-filled space. Then 4 irregular vehicles zoomed into view. 3 were identical. They looked like Y-wing cockpits merged to the join of 60-degree angles made of wide pipe, with a 3rd pipe splitting the angle into 2 30-degree angles. The 4th vehicle was similar, but had 3 pipes radiating from a central hub at the cockpit stern. A 4th pipe emerged from the hub at a 90-degree angle to the plane they suggested. In the image, the 3 identical vehicles separated to form the points of an imaginary triangle. The 4th took up position at the center of the formation. "This is not to scale," Wedge continued. "It's an animation. These vehicles separate to distances of several light seconds, then they go through their activation sequence." In the display, light flared from the outer 2 pipes on each of the identical vehicles. The light beams streaked from one vehicle to the next, joining them together as a triangle of light. Then from each of the 3 vehicles, the central pipe fired, its light hitting the central vehicle. Finally, the fourth pipe of the central vehicle fired. Its laser beam, brighter than all the others, leaped forth into space and disappeared. The Star Lancer weapon uses a giant lambent crystal, a Yuuzhan Vong engineered living crystal, to focus this power and perform the hyperacceleration I spoke of. And now it's ready for its final use. Oh, the second point of difference between this weapon and the Death Star main gun is this. The Star Lancer beam doesn't work. It's a fake. The murmurs rose. Wedge saw Luke grin. Wedge raised his voice to carry over the babble, to quiet it. The purpose of the Star Lancer project is to dictate exactly when the Yuuzhan Vong in this system begin their all-out push against us. They know that the weapon threatens them. They have the example of Anakin Solo's lambent-based lightsaber to compare it to, and to be offended by. They know that we've appropriated their technology, and this galls them. They know that once it's ready to fly, we can destroy their worldship in orbit around Coruscant. We faked up a low-power demonstration of this by positioning one of our capital ships outside the Coruscant system and firing off a laser battery attack at that worldship to coincide with the firing of our fake weapon array. So they know that as soon as we float the fully operational version, they have to hit us with everything they've got. And this, ultimately, will distract them enough to allow us to initiate a complete evacuation of this facility and to take this final battle in this system to them in ways they haven't anticipated. There were many words and expressions of relief after that statement. Wedge saw his officers exchanging glances. That's right. This defense is ultimately not a suicide mission, despite anything you may have heard. That was something of a deception. The new Republic Advisory Council and self-appointed Chief of State Puo had demanded that it be precisely that, a suicide mission, but Wedge had chosen to interpret his orders a trifle differently. The wounded and non-essential personnel have, over the last few days, been transported, very uncomfortably, I'm afraid, in the guise of cargo and other such deceptions, to our freighters and cargo vessels upstairs. Tycho? Tycho rose and hit a button on the datapad in his hand. Your revised orders have just been transmitted to you. You have an hour before things get underway. I suggest that if you have anything remaining here, dirt side, that you want to keep, you'd better gather it up now. If you have any questions, Wedge said, address them to your controllers. We have no time remaining here. Dismissed. The officers rose and crowded to the exits. For a few moments, until almost all had departed, their voices almost did drown out the sound of distant conflict. "How's your new squadron?" Wedge asked Luke. "Not bad. My predecessor was a champion of discipline over talent, but the pilots I inherited are pretty determined. We'll get along fine." Wedge called to an officer just reaching the door out. "Eldo, a moment." The bulky captain of Luzonkia returned, pushing his way through the scattered chairs. His face was much harder to read than it had been weeks ago when he'd arrived in system, but that suited Wedge. Then the only things to read had been confusion and distress. "General, I just wanted to say I'm sorry for knocking your command out from under you. I'll make sure it doesn't reflect badly on your record." The commander gave him a wan smile. "Badly? General, I'm about to pilot the largest, most terrifying single-pilot starfighter the universe has ever seen. Live or die, I'm going to go down in history." "That's a good way to look at it." Wedge extended his hand. "Good luck." Luke settled into his X-Wing cockpit with a noise of satisfaction. In the weeks since he'd left, Wedge had been using the snub fighter as a personal transport, and had had the vehicle maintained with a sort of monomaniacal thoroughness that another fighter pilot could appreciate. "How are you doing, R2? His astromech beeped at him, similarly cheery, happy to be back in action once more. "Black Moon Leader to squad," Luke said. "Black Moon Leader is ready. A report readiness by number." "Black Moon 2 ready." That was Mara, in the E-wing that had belonged to the squadron's former commander. He hadn't been lost in combat. Battle stress had finally reduced him to a shrieking paranoid, leaving him unable to pilot a child's recreational land speeder, much less a weapon of war. Black Moon 3, ready. Black Moon 4, anxious to drive it in deep and break it off. Luke watched as the Starlancer pilots brought their ungainly craft out of the special operations bay on repulsor lifts. The three corner vehicles looked the same as ever, but the fourth, the central unit, had a new addition. In its astromech bay, behind the cockpit, rode a faceted jewel the size of a human. It stuck out of the astromech housing by a meter and a half, glistening in the sun. It was identical to the crystal that had been shattered by a Yuuzhan Vong spy in one of the biotics building's sub-basements, and was just as fake. Somewhere out in the jungle beyond the kill zone, Yuuzhan Vong observers would be seeing this, reaching in alarm for their Villip communicators, speaking in rapid, agitated language to their commanders. One after another, the elite squadrons, those that had been stationed out of the biotics complex all these weeks, to reinforce the notion that this was the most critical point of Borlias's defense, announced readiness and lined up. Gavin Darklighter's Rogue Squadron, Jaina Solo's Twin Sons, Saba Sebatine's Wild Knights, Luke's Black Moons, Wes Jansen's Tanab Yellow Aces, Shankir Naruodu's Vanguard Squadron, the Millennium Falcon. Less than 2 kilometers away, squadrons off Luzonkia dueled with Coral Skipper squadrons and capital ships moving in on the facility, but the elites wouldn't be reinforcing them, wouldn't be confronting the planet-level attackers. They'd be lying to the enemy instead. At General Antilles' command, the Rogue's Twin Sons and Black Moons lifted off. The Starlancer pipe fighters lifted off in their wake. Then the other elites rose. It was a convoy of starfighters, blast boats, and one light freighter, and in some ways it was among the deadliest armadas the New Republic had ever launched. On the holocam screen, Wedge watched the squadrons of the last Starlancer sortie take off. "Alert Luzonkia," he told Tycho. "As soon as the pursuit is on, he's to initiate Operation Emperor's Spear." "Done," Tycho said. "This," Chu Kong La informed Harar, "is it. They're all out attack to destroy my son." "How will it play out?" the priest asked. "All their best pilots protect the lambent vehicles. They expect us to send overwhelming hordes of coral skippers against that fleet. Once our fighters are poised to attack, they will initiate whatever means they have to confuse our Yamasks, to destroy communication among our forces." Chul Kong La offered up a nearly lipless smile. "But it will not happen so. Moments after our forces engage, mobile Dovan Basal mines will enter the area and begin stripping the enemy shields. All the fighters assigned to that engagement have been carefully drilled in individual pilot initiative. A disruption of Yamask control will not inconvenience them in the least. Their most famous fighters will be overwhelmed and destroyed. The menace the crystal represents will be ended. And with the ground-based fighters weakened by exhaustion and loss, the ground facility will fall within an hour." Harar nodded. The old Warmaster's confidence was welcome in these uncertain times. "All these individual initiative fighters, they know not to harm Jaina Solo?"
"They do."
"The gods smile upon you, Chul Kong La."
"May it be so. Now, I must turn my attention to the battle to come."
Harar bowed and withdrew. He gave no sign of it, but he was most pleased. At last, the Yuuzhan Vong goals in the Pyria system were within their grasp. Danny Kui switched over the Wild Knights blast boat comboard to unit frequency.
"This is Wild One. Gravitic suggests a large formation of coral skippers moving our way. It looks like a minimum of 100 skips. Estimated time of interception, 10 minutes.
"Wild One, Ace One, that's enough for the Yellow Aces, but what are the rest of you going to do?"
"Ace One, Rogue Leader,
Pipe down. Correction, sensors are bumping those numbers up. 150 minimum. Ah, that's getting better.
Now? Tycho asked. Wedge considered, still focused on the sensor display, correlating all the data from the various squadrons. He nodded.
Luzonkia, commence Operation Emperor Spear.
Tycho listened to the response, then lowered the earpiece.
Luzonkia's away.
Start evacuation of this facility.
Tycho returned to his comlink. Commence Piranha Beetle. Repeat, commence Piranha Beetle.
Get on up to Mon Mothma, Tycho. If at any time you lose contact with me, whether it's while I'm in transit or for any other reason, you take command of the operation.
Done.
And make sure my shuttle is standing by. I don't want to come trotting out of this building to find only a note of apology waiting for me.
Tycho grinned and extended his hand.
May the Force be with you, Wedge.
Wedge shook it.
If it was, how would I ever know?
Kozdok Bull said, Luzonkia is leaving orbit. We have reports that fighters are leaving her belly and escorting her.
Chulkong La frowned.
Did you not tell me earlier that all her fighters were at ground level, defending the infidel base?
Yes, Chulkong La.
Well? It was our peace brigade advisors who told us this, based on their listening to the talk between their fighters and their triangle ships. So there was lying in that talk. That is my opinion.
Have those advisors stand by on one of our ships. Kill one of them for this mistake. Every time a new mistake of this sort costs us lives, kill another.
It shall be done.
Kozdok Bull returned to studying the blaze bug niche and listening to the villips on the wall. He then turned back to the commander.
The red triangle ship is now breaking from orbit.
Good, that will be easy prey.
She carries few weapons.
Chulkong Law gestured to get the attention of his fleet commander.
Dispatch two Matalocs to eliminate that atrocity.
It shall be done.
Luzonkia turned with a slow awkwardness that no Star Destroyer commander would have tolerated from a chief pilot. Her maneuver was too great, in fact, and once her gradual portside turn was completed, her nose drifted a few degrees back to starboard before the mammoth vessel was correctly lined up. Then her thrusters engaged, and she began a ponderous acceleration straight toward the domain hull world ship.
Confirmed count, 210 coral skippers, Danny said. A couple of those gravitic anomalies in their wake. Time to interception, 3 minutes.
Luke said, all squadrons, reverse course. Head back toward our pursuit and initiate stage 2 on a 1 minute countdown. He put his X-wing into a tight loop.
Beginning countdown.
His finger hovered over the transmit button.
Now.
The two Yuuzhan Vong cruiser analogs approached the Errant Venture from opposite angles. The Errant Venture, built as an Imperial Star Destroyer, captured by smuggler Booster Terek and converted into his own private gambling parlor and mobile hotel, was, unlike other ships of her class, painted a screaming red from bow to stern. The color was alleviated only by lingering signs of battle damage and running lights. Recently the home of the Jedi children, she was known to be an easy mark. The Yuuzhan Vong had not bothered with her much because she posed them no threat, spent much of her recent time running missions out of the Pyria system, and was in general a far less significant target than the Biotic Space or the other New Republic capital ships. But now her time had come, and as the Matalocs closed on her, the pitifully few defensive batteries she had opened up, peppering the enemy vessels with insignificant spikes of pain. The Yuuzhan Vong commanders returned fire, but paced their plasma cannons, waiting for a distance that would allow them to unleash true pain on the offensive Red Triangle. Then, in the moment before they reached the optimum distance, Errant Venture's other weapons opened up. As the Imperial Star Destroyer rotated to bring each Matalok within sight of the greatest possible number of weapons, 30 turbolaser batteries fired at each target, turning the hull of each cruiser analog into a superheated explosive ruin. In a matter of seconds, the two Matalocs were gone,
an expanding cloud of gas and rubble, the only sign they had ever been there. Their commanders would never know the deception performed against them, how, as Luzonkia suffered more and more battle damage, many of her undamaged turbolasers and ion cannons were transferred to the other capital ships in the fleet, making Luzonkia a little armed shell of a destroyer, keeping the others at full destructive power. Errant Venture continued on her course until the gravity well of Borlaos no longer gripped her with any significant strength. Then the Imperial Star Destroyer leaped to hyperspace. Charot Krall, commanding one of the squadrons racing toward the pipe fighters and their heretical crystal, breathed a sigh of satisfaction. All they had to do was keep the enemy fighters in this region of space long enough for the support mines to reach this area, and the mines assigned to Jaina Solo's X-Wing would grab her, bring her into Charot Krall's grasp. Her starfighter was among the cloud of oncoming craft. The specially engineered auxiliary Dovan Basil on his coral skipper could sense that craft's specific gravitic signature, and it communicated its excitement to Charot Krall as a continuous buzz through his cognition hood. The oncoming starfighters had divided into squadron units and were mere moments from reaching maximum firing distance. Charot Krall selected a target within Jaina's squadron, the craft with the claw-shaped extensions. Then all the oncoming craft vanished. Charot Krall blinked, then focused his attention on his second Dovan Basil. The question he asked it was wordless but understood. Where is the vehicle? But the Dovan Basil didn't know. The four vehicles that the infidels called pipe fighters were still ahead in the distance, however. Shaken and confused, Charot Krall oriented toward them and kept up the pursuit, as did the others of his mighty coral skipper force. Soon they pulled within firing range of the flying blasphemies. Charot Krall's contempt grew as the foremost coral skippers of his formation began firing. The pipe fighters did not bother to maneuver. Perhaps their pilots were too inexperienced, too frightened. Charot Krall willed that thought away. It made no sense. Even the most inexperienced pilot could try to maneuver out of the line of fire, and these didn't. One by one, the four vehicles detonated under the plasma cannons of their pursuers, the crystal-bearing vehicle last. The thought came hard to Charot Krall. Were they even occupied by the living, or could they have been abominations controlled by other abominations? Khosdok Bull looked inconvenienced at having to bring incomprehensible news to Chulkong Law. The coral skippers pursuing the lambent fighters report that all the infidels' protective fighters have disappeared. Disappeared? Fled? No, it seemed to be an orderly jump into dark space. And there is more. Tell me. The Matalocks sent to destroy the Red Triangle ship are gone, as is the Red Triangle ship. All destroyed? It put up an impressive battle for something so ill-equipped. Unknown. The Matalock commanders did not report their target putting up a fierce struggle. Chulkong Law scowled, but turned his anger away from Khosdok Bull. The warrior did not have much intelligence to offer, but it did require courage to deliver unhappy news to a senior officer. And this was unhappy news. Mysteries were piling up. He didn't like mysteries. They meant that he had not correctly interpreted every variable, and that was one way to lose an engagement. Once free of Borlaos's gravity well, Luzonkia fired off her hyperdrive, a micro-jump that left her escort screen of starfighters behind. The jump took her halfway across the solar system before a Dovan Basil mine dragged her back into real space. This wasn't an unexpected turn of events. Her crew knew it would happen, though not precisely where. In terms of stellar distances, she was not far now from the Domain Hole World ship commanded by Chulkong Law, but it was not likely that she would be able to make another jump to get closer. The space between this point and that was doubtless thick with Dovan Basil mines. Her crew immediately transmitted a signal on the fleet frequency. It said, in effect, "I'm here." Though she'd been built to carry a crew of more than 250,000, not including ground troops, things had changed. There were no weapon batteries to operate. Life support systems were shut down over most of the ship. Communications were restricted to a few comm channels. Shields and a few other critical systems were largely governed now by droids, taken apart and then reassembled straight into system relay points. No one monitored fuel expenditure, thruster heat conditions, stores, supplies. She now carried a crew of one. A minute later, the squadrons that had just abandoned the pipe fighters appeared in her wake, yanked out of hyperspace by the same Dovin Basel mine. They turned, moving up and around Luzhanka, a protective screen, and Coral Skipper squadrons began moving against them. The Millennium Falcon was not among the vehicles protecting Luzhanka. Instead, the transport dropped out of hyperspace at the edge of one of the thickest of the Dovin Basel minefields, the one on the primary arrival vector from Coruscant space. "I don't read any Coral Skippers," Leia said. "Good. Anyone for Sabacc?" Leia gave him a look. "You know I'm kidding. Ready the grav decoys." Leia flipped the series of switches on the weapons board before her. It had been a single concussion missile power-up sequence switch, but it had, in the last few days, been temporarily replaced. "Five life," she said. "Fire one." She returned the first switch to its down position. The Falcon rattled slightly as a missile launched from the concussion missile tube. Leia watched it on the sensor board. It roared into the middle of the minefield, then slowly turned toward the distant engagement zone. It moved far more slowly than a missile should. On the board, the wireframe images indicating points in space where gravity was distorted remained constant, except in one area. The wire frame wrinkled there, and the distortion moved, at first slowly, and then with increasing speed, in the missile's wake. She smiled. "It's taking the bait." The bait was an instrument package that used the Jaina Solo-developed technique of gravitic signature simulation. The missile she'd fired carried with it the exact gravitic signature of the Millennium Falcon, as did the other four missiles the Falcon held ready. "Fire two." "You really like sounding military, don't you?" Han grinned. "Only when I'm giving orders." "Second missile is away."